The Monologue.
There was a surprise announcement this morning that the House was going to vote on a bill to ban assault weapons, simply titled The Assault Weapons Ban of 2020. And it did pass. It passed with the help of two Democrats whose names you should know, whose names you should never fill the little oval next to, Chris Jacobs of New York and Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania. There were, however, a number of Democrats who voted against it, including Henry Cuellar of Texas, Jared Golden of Maine, Vicente Gonzalez of Texas, Kurt Schrader of Oregon, and Ron Kind of Wisconsin. They voted no. However, it did still pass 217-213. Yay for the people who actually hate guns but don't understand them. But unfortunately, they'll be booing soon because it's going to the Senate where it will die. It will not get a support from enough Republicans for this to pass. And frankly, it might not get all of the Democrats. I imagine that on this, Joe Manchin would be in favor of declining a ban. These bans do nothing. When you go back and you look at the ban, despite the fact that they'll say, you know, when we last banned assault weapons, look at the data, less murders. They didn't attribute it to the assault weapons ban. When you look at best, you'll find studies that say it's mixed. And so if it's mixed, then very clearly it's not a success. Certainly, I would argue it's not worth getting rid of a right that you have. What is an assault weapon other than scary looking gun? Or sometimes it's, well, guns that could fire a lot of bullets. What does that mean? How many? 10. So like a standard magazine. 12? That's, oh my God. They just want to ban guns. They don't want to do anything to change policies contributing to the surge of violent crime, crime that's being perpetrated with guns. In fact, when you look at the policy level, on a local level, you've got prosecutors who do not want to charge with gun enhancements. That's odd. Why wouldn't you want to charge gun enhancements, keeping bad guys in jail for longer? Why wouldn't you want to do that? You're anti-gun. You had here in Washington State, we talked about it. Thankfully, it died. It might come back. A bill that ended enhancements for drive-by shootings. For gang members who are involved in drive-by shootings. Do not tell me that you are anti-gun while going easy on criminals who use guns because of the color of their skin. Because that was the argument. Well, these laws are disproportionately used against people of color. Are they picking up the gun and murdering people with it or shooting people with it? Okay. Then I don't care if it disproportionately impacts. Unless you're telling me there are a whole bunch of white people who are committing the same exact crime, or Asian or Latino or whatever, and they're not being targeted. Unless you tell me, then it's not a racist law. You're just a dum-dum who doesn't care at the end of the day the impact you're having. You are supporting criminals, but not the law-abiding citizens, the good guys.
The interview.
We're having more and more conversations about the future of our climate policies, our energy policies. We would like to see a diversity of options rather than relying on coal, for example. We got to get rid of gas and oil, blah, 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 blah. And usually one of the things that is thrown out there is wind. It plays a role, but it's not everything that people claim. Todd Myers is the environmental director from the Washington Policy Center, and he joins me now. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Happy Friday.
There's nothing wrong in concept about including wind power as part of a diverse set of tools, but it doesn't really come in handy when it gets hot, does it?
That's right. So it can play a particular role, but what people want it to play is a lot of roles, and it can't do that. So the wind blows across the Pacific Northwest, primarily in the middle of the night. And then the other thing that we see is that when it gets very cold or very hot, it's very still, and wind both during the day and the night goes to almost zero. And that's what we have seen. So this has been the very, you know, the first sort of really hot week of the year. And wind across Washington, Oregon, and Idaho has been very close to zero. And the only time it kicked up was literally after midnight one night when demand was very low. So it's, the irony is that the people who worry about hot weather want to turn to wind power, which isn't very good when there's hot weather.
when it is being used, or when it can generate some electricity in the overnights and the early mornings, as you point out, what does that actually entail? How much energy can it help create?
Well, it produces about 7% of our electricity for the north in Washington State, but across the Northwest, less than that. So, for instance, when it kicked up the other night, when demand peaked, actually, I should say during peak hours, it was about 2% of our electricity. So, a really small part. Now, one of the roles that it can play in the Pacific Northwest is because we have hydro, is that rather than having to run water through the turbines, we can store it and let wind do the work and essentially use the dams as batteries. But again, it's a very small portion. And when you talk about sort of perversely destroying dams and then replacing them with wind, it's kind of the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever, because even – and what is our hydro rate? What are we at, 9%, 7%?
Oh, our hydroelectricity is about 70%, and it depends on which utility. But for instance, Seattle City Light is more than 90% hydro.
Oh, sorry, I meant specifically with – I'm sorry, I was talking about the dams. Specifically
the Snake River Dam.
Yeah, Snake River Dam, the ones that we want to take away.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, the Snake River dams are about 8%.
8%, okay. Yeah. And the reason why I point that out is because you have all of these different – areas where we could be investing in this kind of technology. In many cases, we are doing it. All in, it's really, really important. And it seems to me that they think that if you make some, you know, in their mind, small changes, it's not going to have a big impact. But it feels like that's not true at all.
Exactly. And that's not just sort of dealing with the status quo. I mean, if you remove the dams and replace them with wind without increasing electrical demand, you start to get less flexibility, you start to get, you know, more risk of blackouts and things like that. But of course, that's not what we're doing. We're increasing demand for electricity. The estimate that we're going to have about 1 million new electric vehicles increases total demand. And what the Pacific Northwest National Labs has seen is that during the summer, they would actually double electricity rates during peak hours in the afternoon. So that's a time when dams are very useful and wind is not useful at all. So you start to see that when you look at the context of everything we're trying to do, wind is just not going to pull its weight.
What would, for Washington State, what would it look like if you were in charge of our energy policy and you had your endless budget? What would you do?
Well, first, I wouldn't destroy any dams. The second thing is that we do need more production. So I would allow natural gas for those times when we needed electricity to turn on that we couldn't do with hydro, which isn't very often, but it happens occasionally. And that's not going to increase CO2 emissions very much, and there's ways that you can offset that. But the other thing is that we need to get people involved to show people, hey, when you turn on your washer, your dryer, your dishwasher, things like that at 6 p.m., it's really expensive and it's very carbon intensive. If you can wait till 10 or 11 at night, it's much less expensive and much less carbon intensive. Then you can use wind instead of using natural gas or things like that. People don't get that information right now. It's available, but they don't think about it because we've focused so much on building, 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 and not on empowering individuals. So I think it has to be both on the supply and demand side. And if we don't empower people, then we're just sort of at the whims of planners who, frankly, sometimes are not very good at planning electrical generation.
Well, folks listening want to be empowered. Make sure you head on over to WashingtonPolicy.org. We're talking with Todd Myers. He's the environmental director over at the Washington Policy Center. So check out WashingtonPolicy.org. Thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Now this.
The Monologue.
Yesterday, just a few blocks actually from the studio, we didn't just experience an explosion on a truck, on I-5. A few blocks from the studio, there was an encampment sweep. An area near a park that's nearby had been just overrun by folks living in RVs. Trash was everywhere, stolen goods everywhere. It was swept. The city's homelessness outreach and provider ecosystem, the HOPE team. They found about 12 people living there. They've been engaged with them for the last about 20 days or so, a little bit longer than that, since July 7th. They've all been offered shelter multiple times. They've all been offered services multiple times. And as of just a couple days ago, every single one of them said no. They said no. And obviously before any of the sweeps, because of the rules on the books, they got notice. Members of the HOPE team or the Parks Department posted notices basically saying, hey, 72 hours from now, we're going to do the sweep. So they did the sweep yesterday. And guess what? The RV folks weren't there. There was still a lot of garbage and trash. But a lot of the folks who were living there just moved. They moved their RV somewhere else, causing more problems, but this time for other people, other businesses. Unless we are more aggressive with the sweeps, this is going to continue. And the deal, here's the deal. You don't want to take us up on our offer of shelters. You don't want to take us up on our offers of resources. That's on you. That's on you. But you do not get to bother anybody else. You do not get to trash any other neighborhood that is filled with people who actually pay their rent, pay their taxes, pay to clean up after you. You don't get to do that to them anymore. This is a city that I'm glad is sweeping, but they're not doing it fast enough and they're not being brutal enough. Yes, brutal. They think it's brutal to clean out these encampments, then be brutal. Brutalize away. Go ahead and be brutal. This is a city that deserves better. We all deserve better. I'm sick and tired of hearing from folks who are feeling uncomfortable walking their kids to the park out of fear that some homeless person's going to attack them or get too aggressive. I'm sick and tired of having to hear complaints that should be responded to but are not. It's not their fault. If I was in a position where my life was being dictated by the whims of unstable homeless people, I would be complaining too. But I don't want to have to hear these complaints. You shouldn't have to make the complaints. We should live in a city, in a region that takes this seriously. But they don't. On Tucker Carlson on Monday, I did a segment about homelessness in Portland. And weirdly, also Kalamazoo. You can watch it on YouTube.com/JasonRants. And in part of my research, I looked into our homeless czar, Jeff Olivet. He's the national homelessness czar. And he's been hard at work pretending to tackle this issue. And he put out some guidelines, or his agency put out some guidelines on how to deal with these encampments. And they basically say you shouldn't sweep them until you can guarantee them housing. Not shelter, but housing. And housing where they can do what they do that got them out on the streets to begin with. What am I talking about? Alcoholism, addiction to drugs. That means they can continue to do drugs. They have a mental health issue or any other medical issue. It's all good. Let's put them in a home. That's not the right method to take. They will always then be adoptees of the government. I'm not looking to adopt any homeless people. I'm looking to help. And when I say help, I mean address that underlying issue. And if they don't want the help, then okay. I'm not here to be patient forever. We have allowed the homeless to run our city and the activists to run our city for far too long. It's not staying in Seattle. Every single person listening to me right now in King County and Pierce County especially, Snohomish County some as well, you're being impacted by bad homelessness ideas that come out of Seattle, and we have to step up and say no more.
The interview.
More and more sheriffs in Washington State are speaking out, saying the anti-police bills that were signed into law by the Democrats are responsible for the crime surge. We're hearing it time and time again. Joining me on the line is a state lawmaker who has led the charge to do something here. Jenny Graham is a state representative from Spokane, and she joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason.
Where do things stand as far as a willingness from the other side to actually do something here?
Well, it's hard for me to say exactly where each individual person or legislator might stand on this particular issue, but I think it's a fair question, to ask that with everything that's going on. I'm grateful that Governor Inslee has mentioned that defunding the police is not a good idea, and we're seeing the results of that. But, you know, it's fair to ask the question that, you know, why are we not calling a special session then at this point? Because we've got legislation ready to go that can help fix some of the issues that we're dealing with. Governor Inslee signed these bills into law. We have the fixes ready to go. We could be there in a very short period of time to help turn things around. And Governor Inslee can call a special session, or it's two-thirds of both houses, Republicans and Democrats, that can call this. We can call ourselves into session. I'm asking the question why that's not happening right now.
Well, I mean, I think we know why it's not happening, right? It's all talk. Jay Inslee can come out and say he's not in favor of defunding the police 2 years after he should have made that comment. But just saying I don't support defunding police does not mean he wants to get rid of the ban on vehicular pursuits, for example.
Right. That is another one. You know, if we called a special session, we have legislation ready to go that would help our law enforcement to be able to do the job that they need to do to keep our neighborhoods safe and clean.
Did you get any sense in the last legislative session that the needle could be moved? Because there were some Democrats who were willing, but it just never went out for a vote on the floor. That was the move of a Democrat leadership. Is it Democrat leadership holding some of these reforms back, or is it the actual membership?
That, again, is going to fall on each individual person, you know.
Yeah, but what are they saying? What are they saying behind the scenes? Because, you know, you guys have conversations with each other.
Well, I think that, again, it is one of those things that you can point out that the Senate Majority Leader has the ability to pull any bill to the floor that they want to pull. And they've certainly done that in the past. So if there were a lot of Democrat, you know, lawmakers that had been wanting that from their leadership, I would imagine that they would have been moved to do that.
What has this meant for Spokane, for your district?
Well, what it means, you know, and what we're seeing, and again, I want to also point out that I have hope that, you know, even at 100 degrees, I'm out hitting the doors, and I'm talking to Democrats, I'm talking to independents, I'm talking to Republicans, and they're all saying the same thing, that when it comes to these issues of public safety, you know, crime doesn't care what political party you belong to, and they want to live in safe and clean neighborhoods too. So I am excited that those, you know, that I'm hearing that at the doors. And if I'm hearing it and I'm getting, you know, calls from Democrats that are concerned about this, I think that that's part of the reason why you are starting to see the shift is that grief. If your family member is hurt or killed, is no less or more based on what party you belong to. We love our family.
Exactly. And, you know, that's why a lot of folks seem to think that we're headed for a red wave. Do you think that is going to happen here in Washington?
I'm not as much concerned about it being a red wave as much as I'm concerned about people coming together to say, you know, that we need to have safe and clean neighborhoods first. There's a lot of other things that we can and should work on together, and I'm looking forward to that. I just am excited that we seem to be seeing a wave of people want to be able to work and play and raise their families in peace and safety. That's a good goal for everybody to work together on.
Well said. We've been talking with State Representative Jenny Graham. Thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that into detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Now, I can't necessarily say I'm surprised, but boy, did we just reach another level of shamelessness on the part of the media doing the bidding of the Democrat Party, allowing itself to redefine recession so that it could help the Democrat Party ahead of the midterms. Joining me on the line is someone who knows a thing or two about the media bias atmosphere, the environment of media bias. He is the managing editor over at Newsbusters, newsbusters.org. Curtis Houck, interesting 24 hours worth of press releases for the president.
Right, exactly. When you've lost even Stephen Colbert, when he's observed how CNN and MSNBC have been going about things, and he's like, wait a second, this doesn't add up here. You know it's really bad when Stephen Colbert is like, this might be a bridge too far for me.
Right, that's what I said earlier on in the show. I had that exact same feeling when I saw his monologue trending on, or trending, it was on Mediate. I was like, yeah, you cannot lose Stephen Colbert and then go back to your jobs and think that you should be proud of the just the defense that was put up over the course of the last 24 hours. And I don't know if it's because they're loyal to Biden versus just loyal to Democrats ahead of the midterms.
Right. And I think it's worth reminding people that this group that the White House has been outsourcing its talking points to, the National Bureau for Economic Research, it comes from one of their research associates having penned a column for this group called Project Syndicate, which has been funded by, not surprisingly, George Soros. And the members of this, you know, Bureau for Economic Research, the board members, Town Hall has reported that they disproportionately voted for Democrats. And then when you look at what is their actual definition of a recession that the White House is going with, it's this very esoteric term that was like broad economic slowdown across a wide swath of the economy. And you're like, what the heck does that even mean? Yeah. You could take it to mean anything. And so even when presented with clips and their own quotes, the White House is denying that what, you know, they don't want you to believe what you're hearing. And the quotes that, you know, they want you to think that the quotes aren't real. But I was told that facts matter and democracy dies in darkness. And, you know, here again, we have another example of where we should be all about the facts and we should be recognizing that, yes, playing word semantics, you know, doesn't really necessarily make the economy better for Americans who are struggling. But at the same time, we think that everything, you know, it all matters. It all adds up and should matter.
Exactly. And, it, you know, facts die in darkness. Well, guess what? The Washington Post gets to decide now what are facts. And we are living in a post-fact world. I believe it was a Democrat who came close to saying that when it came to Donald Trump. But when it comes to Joe Biden, we are actively seeing things and being told they're not happening. So we're told that at the border, it's totally secure. Well, that's obviously not true. We're told as we're looking at a male that it's a female. We are told that the pullout in Afghanistan was brilliant. It was amazing. It was not. We're told that inflation wasn't real, that it was transitory, that it was the fault of the capitalists. Like, it is, yeah. at some point, like, even the media has to say, we are losing credibility when we do this, when we carry the water of this administration or the Democrat Party.
You would think, you know, PolitiFact, yet PolitiFact has gone around today and saying that it's false to say that the White House is redefining what a recession is. I mean, it's just utterly ludicrous. Those are throwing away their credibility. And the problem is they know that Joe Biden has not given them anything to work with. You see this at White House press briefings where reporters ask the most basic questions to Karine Jean-Pierre, who's the biggest example of why affirmative action hires don't work. And she struggles to answer them. And she makes them seem like Peter Doocy, even though they're not asking her anything that difficult. And she's not answering them because she can't. She's like Joe Biden. You know, you wonder sometimes whether Kamala Harris and Karine Jean-Pierre are trotted out there to make Joe Biden seem smart, because that's kind of how it comes across sometimes, where she mispronounces words. She used her subject-verb agreement, her verb tense agreement, and just basic comments that are seemingly being read off of, you know, sheets of paper are wrong.
Yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing for somebody like me when I'm doing my transcripts for these White House briefings, because it looks like I'm not doing a very good job and that I don't know the English language very well, but actually it's Karine who doesn't know what she's doing either. And now she has to put out these lies and stand by them. And the reporters just, they may ask tough questions in the briefing, but they don't actually do it when it comes to filing stories for their papers or doing stories on the air. They go along with it. The last example I'll just give you is NBC News had a story the other day said about a recession, quote, "It depends on who you ask." I thought facts them to be partners in censoring what you and I and everyone else says on social media. They're more than happy to continue this game and this gravy train. And it just makes them feel good inside because they are so threatened by the right. They're so threatened by other ideas or any information that makes them look bad, they're willing to lie about these sorts of things, even though, as we've talked about before, some of these issues can be kind of esoteric that we talk about, don't affect everybody. But gas prices and the cost of groceries, that's something that even people who we could say are the lowest of low information voters know.
Absolutely.
What's going on?
Curtis Hauck is joining me on the line from Newsbusters, newsbusters.org. Before we let you go, I just want to get your take on the Turning Point USA controversy with The View. I was at the Student Action Summit. I covered it in detail, both on this show and on Fox News. Have they issued their 27th apology at this point? I didn't catch the show today.
No, I don't believe they had a new one today. But, you know, originally we had Sarah Haynes, who supposedly used to be a journalist, read a statement. But people noticed that she wasn't the one spreading the lies.
Exactly.
So they had Whoopi come out yesterday and use the words, "I'm sorry," and that we get things wrong. The people get things wrong. And they mess up. So she was sorry. I mean, again, most people's minds have gone there, but it's very reminiscent of the Glenn Youngkin tiki torches attempt that the Lincoln Project tried to pull off that did not go very well either. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Turning Point fan in the world. I made that very clear on social media, but I think how they've handled this was brilliant going after The View. And that's what more conservatives need to do. You can't take the George W. Bush approach and just take it laying down. You have to punch back when these certifiable lies are being put out there in the media. And this should be a template going forward, because we know the left isn't going to stop with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the problem is it's not easy to win those lawsuits once they're actually brought to the... It can still force a network to at least offer an apology. And this week we heard that Donald Trump was getting ready, I guess, to sue CNN. I don't know if he's actually going to sue CNN, but, you know, there's a difference between offering analysis that we might disagree with, including analysis that's just in bad faith, or putting out facts that just are masquerading as facts. They're not actual facts. It's just your analysis. It's framed in a disingenuous way. It's knowingly false, and they do it anyway. I'll give you the last word.
Right, exactly. And that's how they think they can get away with this. They have their smear merchants and the lowest of lows on their side corral together a bunch of people, paid actors, have them dress up, go stand outside a conservative event or campaign event, and then they get to say this is news without any sort of vetting whatsoever. I mean, that's how we got into the situation with the Ohio rape victim. You had reporters out there just pass along this thing that they thought was going to be enough. And then when conservatives started raising red flags, you know, the reporters realized they actually did do some work and dig into this. And sure enough, as we learned, that story has gone away. It's been Kermit Gosnell and deemed a local news story because it has layers that are inconvenient to their narrative.
It's remarkable. If you want to get all of the media bias put into blog form so you don't have to watch it and get so upset yourself, folks like Curtis spend his days getting upset at the news and then writing about it. It's at newsbusters.org, newsbusters.org. Curtis Hauck, my friend, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
No problem, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rants. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rants is in focus now.
Jason Rants, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
My close personal friend who's never gotten back to me, Greg Gutfeld, had a really good segment on Fox News yesterday, and he was calling out the sort of entitlement mentality of millennials who demand, and actually, frankly, and older, who demand that their student loan debt be erased. And we know that it's going to be forgiven by the Biden administration. We just don't know by how much. But we know that it's coming in the next few weeks. It's intended to try to get folks who are younger to vote. There is a lot of apathy on the left as it relates to this midterm election. They're not happy with the direction of the country. And when you have a bunch of young people who maybe don't feel all that excited to vote, well, you suffer as a result if you're a Democrat, because younger voters have a tendency to vote for the Democrats. So Greg Gutfeld just went on a rant.
You're getting American taxpayers to pay for a gift that benefits Democrats yep. who don't need it. So this isn't like welfare or unemployment or food stamps. It's a gift that you and I pay that is given to upper class white art history majors yes. who can then mm-hmm. spend that money they would have spent on the loan on holidays in the Hamptons. So my solution is, if you want to forgive that stupid debt, take it from the colleges. Since they've tripled the tuition in the last 30 years and their education sucks, do not take it with us. Because I swear to God, if you do, you will see a real insurrection. You're actually stealing money. You're stealing money from people and giving it to people. This is redistribution, yep. but it's yep. not even going to the poor. He's actually taking money from people to bribe people to vote for him.
And I'll let him finish. You got about 30 seconds up, but just it's an important point to underscore. We are not saying if you are low income, we're going to relieve you of some of your debt. What we're saying in this program, or what Biden is saying in this program, is across the board, no matter your financial situation, no matter the industry that you're now working in with the degree that you just achieved as a result of going into that student loan debt, we're giving you all a pass equally. I mean, I guess, is that what equity is? They are treating everyone and their situation exactly the same. So if you're someone who's listening right now and you're, you know, the stereotypical single mom with four kids who's just out of college and got a degree, is working three jobs and is saddled by the student loan debt, and you live in Monroe or you live in Steilacoom, we're going to give you your loan forgiveness, courtesy of taxpayer dollars. But also, the guy who just got out of dental school, he just started his practice in Bellevue or Sammamish. Well, you got into some student loan debt as a result of getting into the medical field. We're going to give you the same amount of relief or forgiveness that we gave the single mom in Steilacoom. Is that fair to you? As a taxpayer, is that fair to you? Is that fair to any of us? No. And of course, we don't take a look at whether or not the student did well in college, meaning did they make use of their time in college or did they barely scrape by. It doesn't take into account what they studied, which is a clear indicator as to how difficult it will be to repay student loan. Because when you're someone who's going into art studies or photography or philosophy or gender studies, things like that, you're not going to graduate and be able to quickly pay off student loan debt. Debt that you took on to the tune of, what, $100,000 so you can go to Gonzaga. Or so you can go to Pacific Lutheran, whatever it happens to be. It is absurd that we're expected to pay for bad decisions. Bad decisions not just by the kids, because we've talked about this in the past. I don't necessarily blame a child and a 17, 18-year-old. That's a kid. I don't blame them for making a bad choice when it comes to going to a college of their dreams, if that's what they believe it to be. I blame the parent for not getting in front of little Timmy and saying, hey, we love you, we are proud of you, we're glad you're excited, but if you're going to consider only philosophy as your major or gender studies as your major, we're not sending you to an expensive private school. You're not going to Seattle U, you're not going to Seattle Pacific University. We're not sending you there. We'll send you to Central. We'll send you to Western. We'll send you out of state too, but we're just not going to spend a crazy amount of money because it's not setting you up for success. Parents need to have that conversation, and we need to, as a community, as a society, have that conversation. You know, Charlie Kirk was on the show last week, and he talked about the college scam. And it is a scam for some people because not everyone needs to go to college. I'm glad I went to college. I think there's a huge benefit of going to college, including when you're going to face indoctrination, because I think if you go in knowing your positions already, it strengthens them. But the fact of the matter is, it's not for everyone. And so if the kid wants to become a photography major, why don't we just put that kid in photography school or have him take private lessons, whatever it happens to be, send him to the master class on YouTube instead of spending tens of thousands of dollars. You don't need to do that because that kid is not going to come out of college and be able to pay off that student loan very easily.
This is a moral wrong. This is the worst thing. This gets me so mad.
I've never seen you this upset.
No, every time I think about this, it makes me so angry because it's actual theft. And they think they can get away with it by saying, oh, it's only 10 grand here and it's only this. Oh, and these students, they can't afford it. Oh, they can afford it. If you can afford a car payment, you can afford your college payment. It's roughly the same, averages like 250, 270. Give it to the truck drivers to pay off their payments. You dope. It's so disgusting. You make me sick. And I don't even know who I'm talking to.
He's 100% correct. He is. He's 100% correct. I will say, do I have a little bit more compassion for the folks who, through no fault of their own, but through the fault of the federal government, were kicked out of jobs or held from going into work because of COVID policies? Absolutely. I have a lot of sympathy for those folks. And I would be okay if we could limit it to those people, giving them some financial relief, because it was not their fault. But what I'm not okay with is treating everyone exactly the same as if everyone's situation is exactly the same. What I'm not okay with is pretending that everyone is deserving, even if they're in a ton of debt, simply because they went to college. What are you doing with your life now? What are you doing? And am I going to want to support someone who's choosing to live in an apartment they can't afford, going out to restaurants or bars every single night? Instead of getting a second job, if that's what they need to do in order to pay off their student loan debt? Sorry, no, I don't have that much sympathy for those folks. My sympathy can only go so far. And it's not going to be extended to people who aren't at least trying to pay off the student loan. Because we know that there are a lot of student loan debt recipients, or whatever we're calling them, millennials, that don't even try. They are expecting this forgiveness. And they've just given up because, oh, well, it'll get taken care of. That's wrong.
The Last Rants.
And with that, as we head into a weekend that's supposed to be a scorcher, I mean, it might hit 89 or 90 degrees tomorrow. Oh, my God. I just want to remind everyone to do your best to stay cool. Make sure you don't have any pets in the car. Don't leave them in the car. It gets very hot. So those dogs, your little gerbil, you take them out. Cats, they'll figure it out themselves. I'm not really worried about cats. They're a very independent creature. They'll be okay. They fend for themselves just all right. But it's the little dogs, like the little dachshunds, the little pugs. Make sure they have access to water, fresh water that's cool. And make sure they don't stay in the sun all day. That's the tip. And it's going to save lives because I'm a hero.